guess I'm ready. Still not ready. Hang on a second. We haven't even posted this show to Facebook yet, so even I don't know what's happening. Coming your way from the dustbin of history here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. Whoa, look at the time. Time to get to Gene Shepherd before we run out of time. Let's turn to Gene Shepherd from this very day in history, March 23rd. 1966, it's Poor Benny, and the famous Evolution poem is told in full on this episode, so let's visit Gene. Poor Benny and Evolution to wrap up this morning's dustbin of history here on WBAI New York. Thank you.
Suspectingly, the children sat about the crackling fireside, little realizing that there was a horror that was to be visited upon them beyond all human comprehension. Stay tuned, gang. It's the popcorn hour. Let's go. I'm just drifting along with a breeze. I'm raising my hands, Rudy Tone. Big man, big man. Jingle bells, bring it up big. Come on, hit it, man. Right. Holy smokes. I'm sorry, lady. Man, it's your own hard luck. It's too bad. Life is rough. I'm just drifting along with a breeze. What's the matter? What a silly way to earn a living. Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all, it's springtime. When it's springtime in the Rockies. Da-da-cha-da-cha-cha-cha. You ever have a song when you were a kid that you absolutely hated? I mean, for some reason or other, there were two songs that even to this day, whenever I hear them, and you hear them once in a while in the Muzak, you hear them in the automatic elevators once in a while. All old rotten songs go to rest, they go to die in that great Sargasso Sea known as the Muzak Library. Old songs that nobody wants to hear again, old songs that people wish they never heard in the first place, all sit there in that great vast Sargasso Sea. Does anybody have a good dictionary out there to give me a definition of Sargasso Sea? How'd you like to go swimming in a Sargasso Sea sometime, huh? Go out there and do a little sailboat and a little skin diving in the Sargasso Sea. Pick a few weeds out of the... Yeah. Oh, I'll tell you some songs. There are some of the songs. You want to hear some of the songs? The typical music songs? When the swallows return to Capistrano. Ooh, what a clinker. Another one is Red Sails in the Sunset. That's pure Muzak fare. And of course, then there's the little breeze at the little trees, something what a fee, ta 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 ta, la ta ta ta, that whisper, Louise, I love you, love you. That makes pimples come up and down my backbone. And, of course, you don't want to hear any more. That's not... Now, it's springtime, friend. I received in the mail, speaking of atrocities, It's not an atrocity. It's just an indication of the way the wind is blowing. That's all. That's the way the wind is blowing here in our little air-conditioned studio, bringing in us once in a while a few little straws from the wind. Here's a picture of a little place. Oh, gee, I puddle all up when I look in. It says, what a great spot to be in. Now, what do you think this advertisement is talking about? It says, what a great spot to be in. Would you please bring me a little romantic music, Robert? Love is a ball. Every little breeze seems to whisper, Louise... Birds in the trees seem to twitter, Louise, la ta ta ta. Yes, it says, what a great spot to be in. And I received this in the mail, and what do you think is pictured just under that slogan? A telephone booth. An outdoor telephone booth. One of those little torture chambers, those little Reichian orgone boxes that nightly encase millions of people calling frantically to millions of others who don't want to hear from them. Oh, what a great spot to be in. I would venture to predict that more tragic things more deep, dark, soul-ripping, tearing, passionate, traumatic experiences have been lived out in little outdoor telephone boxes than any other single spot in creation, outside of perhaps the confession box. Cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha, every little breeze. Oh, stop it. Are you thinking about that? You like that, huh? That is a kind of confessional box. That's a non-denominational confessional box, as a matter of fact, the little outdoor phone booth. Well, please reset that, Bob. I think we need that, because it is springtime, and once in a while, we like to remind our fellow human beings of the basics. And I think there is no better time to remind them of the basics than... the heck? Wait a minute. Very good. There's no better time to remind them of the basics than during the budding and the flowering of that passionate time of the year known as springtime. Bring it on there. Oh, by George. Oh, indeedimo. Let that soak in there just a little bit, huh? Yes. When you, my dear, were a tadpole, and I was a fish in the Paleozoic time, and side by side on the ebbing tide, we sprawled through the ooze and slime, or skittered with many a caudal flip through the depths of the Cambrian fen. My heart was rife with the joy of life, for I loved you. Yes, I loved you, even then. Mindless we lived, and mindless we loved, and mindless at last we died. And deep in the rift of the Caradoc drift, we slumbered side by side. The world turned on in the lathe of time. The hot lands heaved amain, till one day we caught our breath from the womb of death and crept into the light again. Oh, yes. We were amphibians. Oh, scaled and tailed and drab as a dead man's hand. We coiled at ease neath the dripping trees or trailed through the mud and sand, croaking and blind with our three clawed feet, writing a language dumb, with never a spark in the empty dark to even hint at a life to come. Oh. Yet happy we lived, and happy we loved, and happy we died once more. Our forms were rolled in the clinging mold of a Neocomian shore. The eons came and the eons fled, and the sleep that wrapped us fast was riven away in a newer day, and the night of death was again past. Then light and swift through the jungle trees we swung in our airy flights, or breathed in the balms of the fronded palms in the hush of the beautiful moonless nights. And oh, what beautiful years were these, when our hearts clung each to each, when life was filled and our senses thrilled in the first faint dawn of speech. Thus, life by life, and love by love, we pass through the cycles strange, and breath and death by death, we follow the chain of change, until there came a time in the law of life when over the nursing sod the shadows broke, and the soul awoke in a strange, dim dream of God. I was thewed like an auroch bull, and tusked like the great cave bear. Oh, and you, my sweet, oh, from head to feet, were gowned in your glorious hair. And deep in the gloom of a fireless cave, when the night fell o'er the plain and the moon hung red o'er the riverbed, we mumbled o'er the bones of the slain. I flaked the flint to a cutting edge and shaped it with a brutish craft. I broke a shank from the woodland hank and fitted it, head and haft. Then I hid me close to the reedy tarn where the mammoth came to drink. Through the brawn and bone I drove the stone and slew him upon the brink. Yes, and loud I howled through the moonlit wastes. Loud answered our kith and kin. From west and east, to the crimson feast, the clan came tramping in. Over joint and gristle and padded hoof, we fought and clawed and tore. And cheek by jowl, with many a growl, we talked the marvel o'er. I carved that fight on a reindeer bone. With a rude and hairy hand, I pictured his fall on the canvas wall that men might understand. For we lived by blood and the right of might ere human laws were drawn. And the age of sin did not begin until our brutal tusks were gone. Oh, and that was a million years ago, in a time that no man knows. Yet, here we sit, tonight, in the mellow light, we sit at Delmonico's. Your eyes are as deep as the Devon Springs. Your hair is dark as jet. Your years are few, your life is new, your soul untried. And yet, our trail is on the Kimmeridge clay and the scarp of the Purbeck flags. We have left our bones in the Bagshot stones and deep in the Coraline crags. Yes, baby, our love is old. Our lives are old. And death shall come amain. Should it come today, what man may say we shall not live again? God brought our souls from the Themadoc beds and furnished them with wings to fly. He sowed our spawn in the world's dim dawn, and I know that it shall not die. Through cities have sprung above the graves where the crooked-boned men made war, and the oxen creeps over the buried caves where the mammoth mummies are. Then, as we linger at luncheon here over many a dainty dish, let us drink anew now to the time when you were a tadpole and I was a fish. Ah. Very good. That's enough. I just do this to remind us of our basic, origins. Oh, yeah, of course. Let me tell you, you know, some night when I get up the real courage, you know, the kind of courage that makes you say the real stuff. Some night, I'll have to tell you about some unbelievably traumatic times I have spent in phone booths. Oh, yeah, I don't know how many of you, you know, maybe I ought to save that story for the limelight, seriously. I think I better. Because, you know, when you first come to New York and you're in showbiz, you've all heard of phone booth Indians, haven't you? I mean, don't you know what a phone booth Indian is? You know, when you walk around town, have you ever noticed those guys that are hunched over in phone booths? And they've got a little book open, a notebook, and papers are falling out of it, and they're reaching through their pockets for a little stub of a pencil. And you could just hear this muffled voice coming out of that grand, "What do you mean, for crying out loud, what? What do you mean? Would I lie to you? I will not. Well, you know what you can tell him to do, yeah." Those are phone booth Indians. And they are fighting out their battles at 10 cents a shot over and over and over again. Those lines that crisscross all the major cities carry that fantastic conglomeration, that enormous brouhaha of human conflict, of triumph, of defeat, of dreams. I wonder how many guys spend their entire life talking out their dreams or trying to convince other guys who are speaking on telephones, not in phone booths, but in big offices. Yeah, that's the sad part of it. If you saw the two ends of the conversation simultaneously, this little seedy guy with the run-over heels, you know, with a coat that's a little bit too long, and there's a little fur around the edge of his collar, and it looks like, you know, his shirt hasn't been washed for 3 days, and he's been wearing it, and he's living in this little 49th Street flea bag, and he's on the phone. He says, you tell him Jay, yeah, Jackie's on the phone. What do you mean, Jackie? Who? Tell him Jackie. He knows me. All right, tell him Jackie Smothers. What do you mean, what do I want to talk about him? I'm a friend of his.
Well, you tell them I got an idea for a show. Yeah, a package. Well, it's about... Well, look, I don't want to talk to no secretary about it. Well, it's a good idea. I don't want nobody to steal it. It's about these hillbillies, see? All right. And one of them becomes a rock and roll singer. And they play the Catskills. You got it? Yeah?
And there he is. He's talking out his dreams. He's trying to convince some great god somewhere in some pine-paneled office that he ought to call him in and make a presentation before the Palmolive people. And hour after... Oh, it's a fantastic... And when I see this little ad that says, what a great spot to be in, the phone booth. Oh, does that scare me? Oh, what a big difference it is between making a phone call and getting one. Oh, wow, what a rotten spot to... Speaking of... Oh, that reminds me. This is WOR AM and FM, New York.
The bright, clear taste in beer. Miller High Life, the champagne of bottled beer. That's Miller High Life. The happy sound is about famous Miller High Life beer that has soared in popularity because millions more recognize the traditional quality and heritage of an unequaled, unchanging, truly great beer. Wherever people are living better, you'll find Miller High Life in handy take-home cans, on tap, or in the familiar crystal clear bottles. Next time you want the very finest, ask for Miller High Life. The champagne of bottled beer. Sparkling. Flavorful. Distinctive.
Cha-cha-da-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha. We have a great definition of Sargasso Sea. Which reminds me, we also have Woolmouth here with us. A suggestion here from the Woolmouth people. It says, when you think of suits, topcoats, overcoats, you should think of Woolmouth. Because they're made to measure menswear, and it's your guarantee of looking your absolutely fantastic best at realistic prices. But what do you think of when you want custom-made shirts? Dough. Well, the answer is Woolmouth, where you'll find the wide choice of collar styles, the Tony Martin, the Eddie Fisher, the Sammy Davis collars, all of them, styles that are just right for the shape of your face and the length of your neck. Styles that include the hard to... What? Why do I find that funny? Why do I find it funny about the length of your neck that you get special shirts to fit the length of your neck? You know, it never occurred to me that my neck is too long. I don't know. Men are turning into something, I'll tell you. Let Woolmouth made-to-measure experts help design your custom-styled shirts. That's Woolmouth, W-O-H-L-M-U-T-H. Check your phone book under Taylor's, Woolmouth. Let's see, in Ridgewood, New Jersey, there's one at 5740 Merle Avenue. Ask for Morris. In Jersey City at 2826 Kennedy Boulevard, ask for Morris. What is this? What? He gets around. All right, let's see. What else do we have? Hit the button in there.
The nice thing about movie making in Hollywood today is that you can throw away the book.
But pick up the New York Times for real Hollywood news. Peter Bart, the Times reporter in Hollywood, tells why that news is so exciting.
Hollywood has opened up and allowed in.
He sounds like a swaggy rich kid. Listen.
A lot of younger writers, directors, and performers. You no longer have that rigid studio
guys
setup.
Like, exactly, that sounds like this at every cocktail party I've ever been to.
The final cut and the storyline had to be approved by a studio tycoon. A movie now can be made really with an extraordinary amount of independence. You can have a director really pick his cast and not a studio.
Oh, boy.
And a writer do a script without having everybody tell him what he can or can't
say. Make you think you're so smart.
There's a lot of ferment, and this is one of the important stories to write about.
And read about every day in the New York Times. If you're without it, you're not with it. For home delivery, call Murray Hill 70700. That's MU70700.
I'll bet that guy wears very dark suits with extremely narrow shoulders. Yes. Of course, you know, in the cultural desert that is Hollywood, there are many interesting stories, and the New York Times readers want to know, of course, just what's going on out here among the barbarians. Now,
We'll let you know a few of these things from time to time. What do we have here? Rover. Speaking of cultural... Rover, which is a magnificent English car. The Rover 2000. And when is the auto show this year? Does anyone have the date at the Coliseum? Because Rover has been a lot of rumors about this show. It's always in the spring, of course. And I'm sure that the Rover 2000, like last year, is going to be one of the big deals at the show. Last year, it was the unqualified hit of the New York show here at the Coliseum, and for good reason. This is the Rover 2000. They build the magnificent Land Rover, which is used to keep the natives in check all over the world. And I think you'll find this a magnificent car if you want to keep your neighbors in check. It's the Rover 2000, which is one of the reasons why the British constructed the most magnificent, the most far-flung empire the world has ever seen. They made the Romans look like kid stuff. The Rover 2000, please. Is that it? Very good. Now, getting back to real life here. I think I better save that for the limelight for this week, because that's the kind of thing that bears good dramatization. Because every time I pass a phone booth today, when it's the sun is out and I can smell just the touch of the sea in the air, it's springtime. I remember a spring that I spent, a total spring. I spent the complete spring, in fact, an entire summer in phone booths. And it was totally like hell. I'd love to write a play. You know, like Jean Paul Sartre's No Exit. And instead of it taking place in this little room, you know, if you know the play, it takes place in a room, and there are three people sealed together in this room, and that's hell. And they spend an endless amount of time trying to figure out why they're there and why the other people are there, and this is hell. They're just constantly going over their lives and battling back and forth. Well, I can imagine a different kind. Now, that's a French hell. That's a French concept. After all, he's a Frenchman. I can see a play, a one-act play, called Have You Called Mother Yet? Or, yeah, it's a good idea. Here I'm giving some little klutz out there an idea for a great play. You can call it something like the voice with a smile. You know that slogan? And it takes place, and it's a one-act play that takes place entirely in an outdoor phone booth with this guy in the booth. And, you, of course, you're the audience, and you're watching him, and you see nothing but darkness all around him and the dim outline of a cigar store, maybe. And you can see way off to the right the very faint, dim outlines of some never-never existing city someplace. And here he is in his phone booth. And he is making endless calls. And calls are coming back to him. And he hangs up, and he holds the receiver for a second, and it goes, ah, and he picks it up. He says, yeah, hello, yeah? Oh, I see. Oh. Yeah, well, maybe some other time, huh? Yeah. Well, look, why don't you let me send you the brochure? Yeah, mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Okay. All right, yeah. Tell Mr. Anderson I called, will you, huh? Yeah. You got my name? Yeah, it's spelled J-I-M. Yes, got it? S-M-I-T-H. Yeah, I. Uh-huh. Okay, yeah. Fine, thank you. Yeah. He hangs up, and then he goes in his little book, see? And then he reaches in his pocket, and keys fall out. You can see the sea. This is hell. Keys fall out. And he reaches down at the bottom of the booth, and he searches around. He finally comes up with a dime, and he puts it in. And it goes ding, and it doesn't work. You know how the dimes don't work? 99.9%. I'd like to know how much money the phone company makes every year, just off me, putting dimes in phone booths, and it just makes that little tick. It swallows up your dime. Yeah, it hits that dime like a barracuda hitting a minnow. And with about as much grace, you know. It doesn't say thank you, good night, goodbye, or anything. Nothing, silence. I've watched phone booths where I've gone in and put in a dime and didn't get a call.
I've watched phone booths like I go across the street and wait for the bus. 25 guys go in it in an hour, put a dime in, and they kick it and walk away. And that phone is just sitting there. So I believe that some of those phone booths are shills. They never work. They're just there to swallow dimes, you know. You know, just to swallow them. Oh, yeah. And it, you got the scene. He puts the dime in. Nothing happens. And then he hits it. And finally, the dime comes back. Ding-a-ding-a-ding. He's lucky. He takes the dime out. He puts it back in. He dials. And he gets a busy signal. You hear it go, He hangs up. He goes into his book. He calls another one. Hour after hour, he calls. The dreams go on and on and on. He's in hell. A solitary hell. And he never gets anybody really on the phone. And if he does get a guy on the phone, the guy is on another line and keeps saying, hold the line, just a minute, I'll be right back. And then there's that silence. The guy comes back, hello, hello, Charlie? No, oh, you're Jim. Yeah, that's right, you're Jim. And it's that hell, that fantastic hell of a guy trying to make a dent in the city, trying to somehow make a little niche, to pry open a crack in this great monolithic cliff that's known as the Big Town. And he's calling and calling with those little... One of the hellish aspects of this particular kind of inferno is that as you begin to start this thing, you commit a town, and by Tuesday, you've made 3 calls. By Wednesday, you've made 9 calls. And the calls multiply, and the numbers you get multiply. Until by the end of the month, you've got 4,000 numbers of people that you're calling all the time and going to see, and you're sitting in their waiting room, and then you're calling them up again, and then you're calling to check again, then you're calling to confirm the date again, and then you call and find out that it's been canceled, then you call the next guy, on and on. Do you know that I've got back in my pad, I've got 2 notebooks filled, I mean filled, they're about 1.5 inches thick. These little books, you know, you get with the alphabet running through A, B, C, D, and you have the names and the numbers. 2 of these books filled right to the gunnels, and they must weigh 0.5 pound apiece. They're a good inch thick, and I do not know a single one of these people. I have looked through these books just as recently as a couple of days ago, and I didn't even recognize who these people I was calling, these numbers, why I called them. And there'd be little names like Mr. Prendergast, International Roofing Company. You know, just completely inexplicable names. And for some reason or other, at one point in my life, it was so important to have this book. This book somehow was my little life preserver in this fantastic Sargasso Sea of just the drifting weeds. And I hang on to this little book, and I remember the time I sent it off to the cleaners by mistake. I sent my suit away, see, my only suit, and had to stay in the hotel room. And I was waiting for my suit, and I suddenly realized I sent my book away. I sent my life away. I sent my career away. They got my career down there at the 3-hour dry cleaners. Oh. And I frantically rushed down to the hotel lobby and told them to call and set a guy over, and they finally brought my little leather notebook back. I said, oh, thank God. Oh, I'm still alive. I'm still alive. These numbers. And so now every time in the springtime in the day, when I walk along and I see these huddled forms, there is a certain kind of hopelessness to that kind of huddle. You can tell when a man is making a feckless phone call, a phone call that has no hope. And you can see other types, you know, that stand up there big and tall, and they're checking with their office, that kind. They're going between the Four Seasons and the Maracaibo Bar. And they're making a quick call. Hello, yeah, Mr. Bullet here. Okay, put me through to Charlie, yeah. Hello, Charlie, the Coast call? Yeah. Okay, well, you tell him I'll call him back at the operator number, yeah? Okay. And incidentally, if Paris calls, tell him I'll ring him in tomorrow at 10, yeah. Okay, I'm going to the Maracaibo, yeah, with Fred. Clunk, that's another kind of guy. But there's mostly those hopeless figures that are hanging over that thing there and talking endlessly, talking. And have you ever gone into a phone booth in certain parts of town late at night, and it's the kind of phone booth that people have apparently done a lot of living in? There's beer cans and bottles of Sneaky Pete, and it's very gamey. Oh, yeah, fantastically gamey. And then I see this little ad. It says, what a great spot to be in. That reminds me, Would you please give me a little sad music? Just a little sad music. A little sad romantic music. Oh, that's beautiful. Yes, Father.
Father. Dear Father, come home with me now. The clock at the steeple strikes one. You... Father, you said you were coming right home from the shop as soon as your day's work was done. Our fire has gone out. Our house is all dark, and Mother's been watching since tea. With poor Brother Benny so sick in her arms, and no one home to help her but me. Come home, come home. Come home, please, Father dear. Father, come home.
Oh, hear the sweet voice of the child, which the night winds repeat as they roam. Oh, who could resist this most plaintive of prayers? Please,
Father, dear Father, come home. Father, dear Father, come home with me now. The clock in the steeple strikes two. The night has grown colder. Benny is worse. But he's been calling for you. Indeed, he's worse. Ma says he will die, perhaps before morning shall dawn. But this is the message she sent me to bring. Come quickly, or he will be gone. Father, dear Father, come home with me now. The clock in the steeple strikes three. The house is so lonely. The hours are so long for poor, weeping Mother and me. Yes, we're alone now, Father. Poor Benny is dead and gone with the angels of light. And these were the very last words that he said. I want to kiss Papa goodnight. Oh, yes. Hear the sweet voice of the child, which the night winds repeat as they roam. Oh, who could resist this most plaintive of prayers? Please, Father, dear Father, come home.
That's enough of that. I just thought you ought to know that there's more to this phone booth problem than meets the eye. Oh, yes. I'll tell you, I had one funny night, though, in a phone booth. An absolutely fantastic night. I shouldn't even tell you about this, because it's one of those things, you know, that you keep a little secret inside of you. I am way downtown, and this is a couple of years ago, and you know how dark it gets some nights in New York when it's 3-4 o'clock in the morning, and there's a kind of soft spring wind blowing up 6th Avenue. You could smell the Battery down there, and you could smell just the little slight touches of New Jersey in the air. You could smell the refineries, you know, and the pigs over at Secaucus. And, you know, it's just life is, you know, and you begin to have this thing growing up in you. You know that terrible urge that you get when it's springtime? This is some kind of a mushroom grows in you. Yeah, you want to run. You want to, you know, pull your pants off and yell and holler and break windows. Oh, it's, you know, you go, ah! You know, it's, I don't know whether women get this, but men get a fantastic itch in the springtime. And it comes and goes. Just all of a sudden it'll hit you. You'll be walking across the street, and you get this fantastic yawning, yearning, kind of a... Oh, I don't know. It's a kind of a thing that turns you inside out for about 10 minutes, and then it goes away. And then you're walking along, and you say, what the hell was the matter with me there? You know, what was that? And you walk along, and pow, it hits you again. Wow. Well, one night, I'm walking along this street, all by myself. Now, you get this. All by myself. I don't know whether I should tell this story. I don't know. I mean, you know, I have to protect the guilty. I have never told this story before. It's a funny, peculiar moment, you know, in life. And I'm walking... All right. I'm a grown-up person, see, and I'm walking down the street. And it's about 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm all by myself. It's so dark, boy. And above me, I can see those stars hanging there. It's springtime. And I'm walking along the street, and there's a lot of warehouses around there. The street's like a canyon. There's a single soul on the street anywhere. A couple of little dim yellow lights down at the end of the block, and a cab goes cruising by, and that's about the scene. And I'm walking along the street. And I come to a crosstown street, saying, I'm standing there.
I look around, and all by myself, I'm watching the lights flash red and green. There's something extremely, I suppose you might say, symbolic modern 20th century. To see lights say, walk, and ain't nobody. It just says, walk. Or it says, don't walk. And there's nothing to say no or yes, except that great cordon of ghost with which the street is filled. And the morning after, the night before, the day following. And I'm standing on the street corner there, and the light's green and the light's red. I'm looking around. There's no buses around. I'm waiting for a bus a little bit, and I say, well, probably won't be a bus for about an hour. And I start walking down towards 23rd, and I cut around 5th Avenue where all the toy shops, you know, that's the toy district. You know, most people know here in New York City, they know the fur district, or they know the diamond district over in the 40s off 6th, or they know the flower district down in the 20s, or they know the garment district. But nobody seems to know anything about the toy district. And, that, you know, that's a great district down there, you know, with the Flatiron Building, all these toy places, and the Daisy Air Rifle Company's there, and they've got little tanks in the window, and they've got ducks, and they've got wind-up whales and the whole scene. And I'm walking around looking. It's springtime. Fantastic night, see? It's about 60 degrees, and I'm feeling this yearning, this wildness, this thing there. I want to eat the Flatiron Building, you know, and start at the bottom and go all the way up. And I'm ready for action, boy, any kind. I'm walking along. And there in this big window is Santa Claus, springtime. It's already there. Santa Claus is there, and all the new next year's Christmas tree ornaments are all hanging there. And down in the front of it, there's a sign that says, get ready early this year. Make your buys, make your purchases for special display purposes now. We're in full swing. And so here it is, it's springtime, and probably some of you know, but all the Christmas work, all the creating of Santa Clauses and all this stuff goes on right now about this time of the year and continues all the way up through August. This is the big time now for the Christmas display people. They're all working. So I'm down there, I'm looking at Santa Claus. It's spring. Oh, he's a mechanical Santa Claus yet, you know, and he's going up and down and waving his hammer in the air and yelling and hollering Merry Christmas. And so I walk on down past Santa Claus, and I'm looking at the sleds, and then I'm looking at the electric trains, and it's dark, 3-4 o'clock in the morning, and another cab goes whistling by. And I come to the street corner, and I turn right. Now I'm looking at this big collection of lead soldiers, and I'm looking at all these plastic forts and so on, and this is a totally empty street, big, long, empty street. And I'm looking down at a couple of yellow light bulbs hanging down there. Way down, I see about 3 blocks away, I see this Needick's hot dog stand, a couple of guys standing in there drinking their orange drink and knocking down their hot dogs. Nothing. Nobody on the street but me. Just life. And wow, I own this town. And so I walk about 40 or 50 feet, and suddenly out of the darkness came a sound. A sound which is to a 20th century man one of the most important sounds that he can hear. It's the ubiquitous sound. It is the sound of our time. The sound of our lives, really. It's the sound of failure and success, of hope, of dream, of disaster. It's the sound of now. It's 3:30 in the morning. I'm all by myself on a dark street down there in the toy district when I hear the unmistakable sound of brrrr. Phone is ringing. Someone is calling somewhere at 3:30 in the morning on a vacant street in this fantastic Babylonian epic of a city. Brrr. I look around, and then I see, about 60 feet away, back there by the bus stop, is this phone booth. It's lit up. It's one of these green metal ones. And it says, telephone over, all lit up. And it's going, brrr. Somebody is calling the phone booth. There I am, all by myself. No name Shepherd. Anonymous. A denizen of this 20th century phantasmagoria. All by myself. And so I wander back towards the booth, figuring any minute now it's going to stop ringing. Which it does. I'm about 10 feet away, and it goes, brrr. You know that angry sound of somebody saying, out of hell with it, and he hangs up. And I say, oh, well, I shouldn't have answered it anyway. I take three steps, and suddenly it goes, brrr. It starts up again. Obviously, the guy said, whoever it was says, I must have dialed the wrong number. Brrr. Brrr. Oh, very insistent. Brrr. Brrr. It's a very sad phone. Well, I'm going to confess something. I opened up that phone booth door, those folding doors. I stepped inside. My hand paused over that black instrument of torture for maybe 8 milliseconds. And I picked it up, picked it up like that and held it up to my ear and said, yeah. And there's a long pause. At the other end, I hear a little breathing. And then this chick's voice said, Benny? Another long pause, and I said, yeah. And she said, well? And I said, well, what? And she says, you know what? And I said, well, I've been thinking it over. And she says, what do you mean you've been thinking it over? I said, that's what I said. She says, well, what do you mean you've been thinking it over? I thought we'd been through this before. And I said, that's right. We have been through it before. And I've thought it over and forget it. Clunk. I'm going to tell you, I did this. Just like that it went. And there was a long pause and the phone... Believe me, I have stepped out of the booth and I'm about 10 feet away and it goes, ah, ah, ah. I picks it up again. I says, I don't want to talk to you. I hung up. And it never rang again. I stood there for a fifth. What do you mean I ruined Benny's life? I probably saved the poor klutz's life. Holy smokes, you should have heard this chick. Let me tell you, she had talons that were a foot long. And I stood there and waited for the bus, and sure enough, I saw that yellow light coming down from the horizon. It stopped in front of me. I got in, and I sat way in the back, and I read my New York Times. And there was another guy sat up near the front, and he had a transistor radio plugged in his ear. You could hear the rock and roll. And the old bus driver sat up there and spit on the floor once in a while, and I was taken away from the scene of my crime. Benny, wherever you are... You are listening to the one guy that stood between you and total disaster. And chick, wherever you are, give me a call. I'm ready. Okay?
Gene Shepherd from This Day in History, March 23rd, 1966. That's it for the Dustbin of History. I've been your curator and janitor, Max Schmid. Visit our Facebook page, The Dustbin of History. Like it. Join it. And stay tuned for K-Wave USA with Emerson Unger.